You're listening to a Monster Kid podcast.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this special message. How's it going, eh? Today's show on the Monster Kid Podcast Network is a classic, hosted by two comedic geniuses who've watched way too much North American cinema from the 21st century, Mike Pisacano and Anthony Cilio. Entitled Cinema Marketing, this podcast chronicles the heroic adventures of two latter-day consumers of film and the marketing surrounding them, or, to use the correct 20th century terminology, losers. We hope you give it three thumbs up. Welcome to Cinema Marketing. The trailers may have lied to you, but we won't. I'm Mike.
I'm Anthony.
And I'm Lewis.
Good old Lewis.
And we're back after the Thanksgiving season to tell what we're thankful for. And none of that is going to show up in this episode.
How was your Thanksgiving, Michael? Really quickly, how was it?
Oh, it was good.
Good. Lewis, you have a good Thanksgiving?
Watch the parade.
I was jet lagged and asleep the whole time, so not really. I got it. How was yours?
It was pretty good. So you didn't watch the parade. You missed Hoda Kotb saying, like, next up is Monkey D. Luffy from the manga series One Piece.
Oh. Yeah, there was a One Piece balloon, and my sister and her boyfriend were freaking out about it.
Hey, yeah, look, I take that pill every now and then, and I tell you what, the One Piece ride is a fun one. I like it over there. Can't watch it for 2,000 episodes, but I dig it.
And you know what else was funny? That same day, I've never consumed a second of One Piece content, but that day, after watching it and being around my sister and her boyfriend who were talking about it, I open up TikTok. First thing that pops up is One Piece content, and I'm like, they are spying on me. They're not even hiding it anymore.
It's the feds.
It's the fucking feds.
Well, all right, so let's start off with a bang that we've been waiting like 10 years for, and this was like right under the wire. Like, as soon as we sat down to record, I'm like, guys, emergency trailer drop for Furiosa.
Yeah, Furiosa looks good.
I kind of gave up the idea that this was ever even gonna come out because it's just been so long and I hadn't heard any news of it, and then all of a sudden it's just, here's like, it's not even a teaser, it's like a full 2.5 minute long trailer, and you see a lot.
Yeah,
and the thing is, like, I was surprised because I'm like, it didn't look like the way that, like, remember when we saw like that new Planet of the Apes thing, and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't look as good.
Oh, that looks like horse shit.
And I'm like, this still looks like Fury Road.
Yeah, because it's George Miller just doing his thing.
I'm saying it hasn't been diluted by fucking studio garbage, at least from what I could tell.
I will tell you, it hasn't been diluted by studio garbage. The one thing that I'm a little, took me out of it a little bit, I feel like there's too much star power. I
the
see
casting
it. I'm like,
is a
the
little
casting.
Bit.
I'm like,
I
it's
don't
so
like Anya Taylor-Joy as.
I'm the other way. I don't like Chris. I don't like Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah,
Chris Hemsworth. I do just see as like Chris Hemsworth, but he's not playing a character. I know, like, her being Furiosa just doesn't add up to me. I don't know. It just doesn't. I don't see how grows up to be Charlize Theron.
Yeah, I said, like I said, are they going to explain how her eyes get closer to her, to the middle of her face as she gets older?
The one thing that I was. The one thing that I was questioning while watching this is that, like, in the text, it says, like, 45 years after the fall of humanity, a young Furiosa is taken. And I'm like, this has already been 45 years. How old is Mad Max? If, like, because the first movie is like the start of the downfall of civilization.
So in the year,
it's 45 years after that. Yeah, and then 40, he's and then a couple of other years after that. And then he's still Tom Hardy.
45 years after the fall of civilization. So the year 2070.
Yeah, that's right. He was a cop.
He was a cop
when there was still like civilization.
There was still people around.
He was like 70 years old.
Maybe it's like a James Bond thing. There's like multiple Mad Maxes. I would buy that theory. There's a new Mad Max every decade.
Max is just a title. Like whenever he gets taken by a warlord, like they just give him the name Mad Max.
You know what?
It's like just my name a mood that he's in. If he was happy, they would call him Happy Max. But these movies are about times when he's mad.
You know, it's like I honestly could see the movie going that direction. It's totally not out of the. I don't think that's ridiculous. I think that's cool. I'd be totally okay with that if George Miller did that.
Yeah, and I get to see
you get to see more of a Morton Joe, that he's going to be at least more of a character in this movie too. I'm like, good. But and also, yeah, I don't know who Chris Hemsworth is playing, but like
to me, he's just playing Chris Hemsworth. Like, yeah, he just looks like Chris Hemsworth. I can't. Man.
But I'm like, deal. The chase scenes and all of like the dirty grit of it still looks very Mad Max. So I'm like, I have hope for this one. And it right in an age where any blockbuster just seems dead on arrival, this is at least a little bit of a shining spot for me for the, going into this year.
Yeah, it's going to be good. What was the release date?
Summer, sometime next year. I don't remember.
Oh, that's going to be, and this is going to be a definite IMAX.
Oh yeah. It's
okay. Wait, if this is showing
in the 4DX,
are we going to see Furiosa in 4DX? Lewis?
Maybe on a repeat viewing, but I don't know if I want to do that the first time.
I'm standing firm. I'm never stepping foot into a 4DX theater ever again. Like, I don't care. Like, if it was to save my mother from drowning, like, I wouldn't do it. Like, I would just be
your
like,
mother's drowning by the water jets in the 4DX theater.
Just squirting straight down her throat so she can't breathe.
Oh. Well, you know, this Furiosa, she's a bit of a mean girl.
Like, you gotta work on your transitions, man. That was bad. Well, but I gotta tell you, it wasn't as bad as this fucking trailer. Yeah. This movie looks like horse shit.
Yeah, so this is, an adaptation of the Broadway musical, which, Lewis, you and I did see Mean Girls on Broadway.
And I had a good time with it. Does not make me want to see this movie.
Yeah, no.
It's a movie loosely based on a Shakespeare play. Then they made a musical based on that movie. And then they're making a movie musical based on the musical based on the movie loosely based on the Shakespeare play.
So it's like the Lion
King. Tina Fey's in like most of those things.
Yeah, she was real buddy-buddy with Shakespeare. she calls him Billy.
See, we were watching this and we're like, are they going to show any of the songs? And I'm like, no, they just play like an Olivia Rodrigo song over it. And I'm like, they're going to try to hide that this is a musical. And yeah. And it's also being released at the beginning of Fuck You, It's January.
Yeah, I said, Wonka's a musical too. People don't realize that. A lot of these movies don't advertise as musicals because the minute you do that, it becomes niche.
Yeah,
only theater kids are going to see it.
Wonka was a musical 5 minutes ago, like 5 minutes before we started the show. And like, I'm shocked because I had no fucking clue based on any of the advertising.
Yeah. You're going to see it with us, right?
No.
Are you going to sign up for the Regal Pass, Lewis? Come on.
I think I might. Yeah. Well,
then you got to see it with us.
Maybe that was an option before I knew it was a musical. Like now, like.
Because that's the thing now. It's like if you hide the fact that you're a musical in your advertising and then people are in the theater and then they are ambushed by the fact that it's a musical.
I don't think people will leave. I don't think it's the kind of thing.
I would 100% leave. 100%.
I mean, I would too. I'm talking about the average populace, especially if they don't have a pass like us and they're paying, you know, $30 for a movie ticket. Maybe that's more of a reason to leave now that I think about it.
Yeah.
If anyone listened to our old show, Random Movie Roulette, there is an episode on our Patreon of us watching the Disney Channel original movie version of Freaky Friday and finding out as we're watching it that it's a musical.
Wait, and there's a Disney Channel. Disney already had a Freaky Friday with the
and they made a DCOM version that was a musical and we didn't know until they started singing and we lost our fucking minds. Like it was heartbreaking to come to that realization. No.
Although sometimes that's fun though, when you see a movie and you don't know what it's going to be. We had a couple of those before where we're like, wait, what?
Well, it's a musical.
Not just musicals, just in general. You go into a movie thinking it's something and then it's totally different.
The point of this whole show.
Yeah. Good point.
Let's talk to another mean girl. Her name is Eileen.
That was the same transition. It wasn't even different. You didn't even try. Eileen, it looks like
a friend Jack turned us on to this. He's like, guys, have you seen the trailer for Eileen? And I'm like, I didn't see it until, you know, we watched it for here. But as we were watching it and all of the pull quotes that were shown as like a Hitchcockian thriller, like a twisted sexual psychological noir, I'm like, oh, all of these are words that would make Jack come.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I said all it needs is a poster, is a poster that's a painting, and he's in.
I'm sure there's one out there that
there's a lot of those now. I notice a lot of movies do that now. They have like an artistically done, like painted poster.
Yeah. Which I'm so down for this though. It's based off of a Nevtessa Moshfegh novel, which I've read one of her books, but I quite like it. So I'm down for that. And the director directed Lady Macbeth, which I love that movie. So I'm all in.
Yeah, I haven't seen that movie, but I have read My Year of Rest and Relaxation, and I'm still waiting on that Yorgos Lanthimos treatment for that movie. But you know, while I'm waiting for that. You know, this does look like, you know,
relax, you're gonna get a Yorgos Lanthimos.
Oh yeah, it's coming out. It's it'll come out in a few weeks.
Can't wait.
Yeah. But yeah, no, so yeah, this looks, yeah, it does look kind of like, you know, weird and twisted and kinky, and Anne Hathaway is just, you know, serving, and I'm like, you know what, I'll be here for it.
Real mommy looks coming from Anne Hathaway. Yeah,
she's so hot, especially for her age. It's insane. And you want to know what else looks weird and kinky and just wrong is the animation in the new Garfield movie.
God.
Oh,
that was a, you want to get on me about my transitions?
Hey, mine wasn't just a pun. I think mine was a little better.
All right, guys, I'm going to do the next transition. So don't do it. I got the next one.
You do it. All right. Garfield. Yeah. Anyway, Garfield looks bad. He doesn't sound right.
This is, yeah. So Chris Pratt is playing Garfield. And I'm like, I feel like this was like what I was worried about when you heard that Chris Pratt was being cast as Mario, where at least in Mario, I'm like, all right, he's able. It's like, you know,
he's trying a little.
He's just like, you know, it's not overtaking it. But I'm like this. I'm like, no, it's just Chris Pratt and he's Garfield. And as we were watching it, I'm like, Garfield should not be smiling this much. Garfield should be a fucking asshole. And I don't. And the thing that I said, this movie gives me big Scoob vibes, like a Scoob started out with like
Scoob. We thought it was going to be cute. Yeah, that's the difference.
That's the thing, is because it looked like, oh, they have like, you know, a little baby version of the character. And it's like how he becomes friends with his human best friend. And then like once he grows up, then the movie sucks. And I think that's exactly what this reminded me of.
You know, when I was watching that trailer, I was like, is Lorenzo Music still alive? Lorenzo Music has been a lot dead for 22 years. So I'm not up to date on my Lorenzo Music knowledge.
Chris Pratt was our only option.
Oh, yeah, our only option.
He's the only actor.
Honestly, the way these movies are cast now, that's what it seems like. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, this didn't. I was like, you know,
from casting to animation, yeah, because to plot, like, yeah. They're doing the whole, oh, it's my dad. The dad's played by Samuel L. Jackson. It's like, oh, this is my father. I gotta reconnect with him. I'm so sick.
And the animation, it's like they're trying to like emulate the 2D art style in 3D.
It's like the Cal Arts style,
yeah, like Scoob did. But
it looks
like,
the reboot of Rugrats on Paramount Plus.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah,
you're right. Which looks like Steven Universe. That's soulless. What every cartoon looks like now. It's bad.
They all just look like blobs. Yeah, there's no character design anymore for anything.
But then if they try to look quote unquote realistic, you get movies like Wish that just look disgusting and weird. It's like, can't you just have like artistic style anymore? I don't understand what happened to that.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big Garfield fan to begin with, but this certainly wasn't winning me over.
It's a problem across the animation world, and we're seeing both of them here. They don't hire creative artists anymore, and they don't hire voice actors anymore. They just hire celebrities to do voices. Yeah. Huge problem. Huge problem. This movie's committing both of those cardinal sins. It's crazy.
I hate it. Shit. Well, speaking of movies that start with the letter G,
you know what, that was
you were holding us out on that one.
Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which if you told me last year that the next Ghostbusters movie was gonna be called Frozen Empire, I would think like someone like made a joke on 4chan and it was being taken too seriously. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard of, and this trailer is stupid and awful. I hate it.
How would you feel if it was called Ghostbusters Frozen Ape?
I'm in.
Ghostbusters crappy world.
Ghostbusters Stay Puft's Big Bean Burrito.
Yeah, so this is another example of like, I was sitting in a theater, I hadn't seen this trailer yet, and like for the first
before Napoleon,
yeah, and like maybe the first 15 seconds I was like, what is this movie? I haven't seen this before. And then I'm like, oh, what? There's a Ferris wheel and there's a big tsunami. Oh my God. This looks kind of creepy. What? And then I'm like, as soon as I see the Ghostbusters logo, I'm like, fuck. Why? Like every time they show a new trailer for a new movie, and it's like, as soon as you realize that it's a property, and I'm like, I lost interest.
This like, is a movie for fucking kid 80s kids who buy Funko Pops. Like, and post cat memes in 2023.
Isn't that what the first Ghostbusters reboot movie of this
all was? Of them are.
Yeah,
all of them are that.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
Ghostbusters franchise.
They're New York
that.
Comic-Con fodder. It's just like to get a bunch of Tumblr people in a room.
I hate saying that too. The Ghostbusters franchise. No, Ghostbusters was two movies and a cartoon. That's it.
And only nothing one of those things was good.
The second movie isn't horrible. It's fine.
Yeah, I didn't see the Ghostbusters Afterlife, but Lewis, like, I will never forget your Letterboxd review where you said like, this is like if Young Sheldon had ghosts in it.
Yeah, Bazinga. I stand by that.
Yeah, you know what? From what little I've seen of it, yeah, I believe it.
Yeah. All right, our final mean girl of the show,
yeah.
Madame Web.
God,
I'm so happy. This looks awful.
Lewis, do you want to take the reins on this?
Yeah,
one?
We have been covering this movie for as long as market research has existed. Like, and
this is Kraven the Hunter.
This, yeah, exactly. And for a little while, Morbius.
No, yeah, because it all stems from like that Morbius cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Because like, I think though this has way more precedent than Kraven the Hunter.
When does Kraven the Hunter come out?
Next year. It was pushed from this year to next year because of the strikes.
Dude, they've been talking about making that movie since before the pandemic.
Yep.
Like, this is insane. Anyway, sorry.
No, you know, it was funny because while we were watching, again, this trailer was in the theater the first time any of us had seen it, and then Dakota Johnson comes in, and then it shows the Marvel logo, and the whole time, he's sitting next to me trying to figure out like what character is this.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't.
And then by the time they reveal the title, he's like, they're just making movies about anyone now, aren't they?
Yeah, they're gonna soon make a movie. You know the Superman. I know this is DC, but you know the Superman number one comic where he's holding the car and there's that guy in the foreground. They're gonna make a movie about that guy, his life story.
Like, and the last shot is that moment.
That's gonna be the poster.
They're gonna make a Scrimblow movie. It's coming. It's happening.
Yeah, this is an insane thing that this exists. First of all, it looks like a fan film. It is like it looks so low budget. It looks like a bunch of cosplayers running around. The bad guy is like just Spider-Man, but like a handsome middle-aged Hispanic man who's Spider-Man. I have no clue what's going on in this. Madame Web is hanging out with like five spider ladies who no one casts like webs in this whole trailer. There's no hint that like actual any of these very Spider-Man looking people have any spider powers at all.
Lewis, there's no webs, but there's a guy playing a PSP on the subway. They gotta remind you it's a Sony movie.
Sony movie. Yeah,
these last three trailers, Garfield, Ghostbusters, Madame Web, this is just Sony just being
Sony. Can't make movies. Who knew? Can't make good movies.
Sony's got no movies.
They got no games. They got no movies.
Yeah, I can't wait to watch this. This looks like a beautiful piece of shit. And I can't wait to take it in.
Oh, this is no me and Lewis in the theater opening night.
Oh yeah.
All loopy
wearing
and then
t-shirts like yeah,
halfway
like,
through the movie is when we start laughing halfway through. Also, I gotta ask, what are Madame Web's powers in the comics? Because I'm like, can she that so Raven see the future? Is that part of who she is?
I'll be honest, so I typically like tune out of Madame Web stuff like in comics because she comes with too much bullshit, and that bullshit's always like Spider-Verse nonsense. And Spider-Verse stuff has been cool like in the last, you know, since those movies came out. But like, there's like a long history of stupid Spider-Verse stuff. And Madame Web is often like the one like sitting at the center of it. She's like a medium and she has something to do because like in the comics, there's this idea of like spider totems or whatever in different universes. And she's connected to all of them. It's all fucking nonsense. She's an old lady. She's not Dakota Johnson in any of those comics.
So she could tell the future. In what way does that relate to a spider?
Spider sense?
Well, it's like the future, but like for spider people. Like that is that's
God. And also
she's useful to a very specific set of people.
Also, I think it's funny just the fact that Dakota Johnson is in this, like you could tell out of her face that like she doesn't give a shit about any of this. Like she can't even protect because I'm like I think she's like, you know, she's built up enough of like at least a respectability that like her being in this is just like so blatantly I'm doing this for the money and this movie's gonna suck. Like there's no way. And I'll ask, is Madame Web the villain of Turn Off the Dark?
She's one of them, I think. I know she's in it.
I know that has something to do with like the villain is like some woman, like some Spider Woman thing, but it's not Spider Woman.
Oh no. I remember it was like actually, I think it was like Arachne, which is funny because one of these spider people is the 90s Spider Woman who also went as Arachne. It's like that black and white Spider Woman suit, which is a cool character. It doesn't seem to be who this is, but just using that suit. But that was like for some reason in Turn Off the Dark, like the villain was like a not like a comic book character, but like I think like an Egyptian goddess of spiders or some nonsense like this.
Some Julie Taymor shit. Anyway, you know, I was thinking recently, I was like, you know what? In the third Beyond the Spider-Verse movie, I'm like, we've gotten 60s animated Spider-Man. We've gotten a 90s Spider-Man. We got Andrew Garfield in the Insomniac video game. I'm like, we haven't gotten Turn Off the Dark Spider-Man.
He's a dead guy.
Is the one Spider-Man that I still have yet to see in these movies.
They'll make it and they won't tell anybody it's a musical.
Yeah.
And then they'll go in and... it's a musical.
I well, want it that, to be the guy who fell.
That's the next after they do the after Marvel's done with this cinematic universe, whatever, the next iteration of Spider-Man as a film should be an adaptation of Turn Off the Dark.
Though they would never. They would never.
I just want them to bring it back to Broadway so I can go see it.
Yeah, I'm like the fact that I'm like if I knew you back then, we would have had to have gone and seen it.
Oh, dude, I would have done acid and gone to Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
I can't imagine dropping acid and going to see that. That sounds like a nightmare. A nightmare.
All right. Well,
why would you do that to yourself? What?
I want to live in the Spider-Man.
You're asking for a bad trip.
Let's go. Now that we're done with the trailers, we're going to move on to our cleverly titled rant corners. We got Ant's rants, Mike's gripes, and Lewis is through with this. Ant, what's your rant for this episode?
So, as some of you may know, we've mentioned it a few times. Mike and I, and soon to be Lewis, are Regal Unlimited subscribers. And for those of you who don't know, you pay a monthly fee, you see as many movies as you want. Long story short,
if you want to sponsor us, please
pay for our Regal Unlimited. So, you know, obviously our theater is considered a gold star theater or something. So our theater costs $24 a month, which isn't bad, whatever.
But it is the most expensive plan.
Yes, because we live in New York and the theaters that aren't in bumblefuck nowhere cost $24. So what we were doing is, you know, obviously I always go in and see what's new just because I could see anything. So I go in the Regal app and I see what's playing and I've seen almost every movie except for that Alexander Payne movie, which I'm going to see. And everything else is bullshit. I don't want to see it. So I look at next week and I see the new Beyonce movie is coming out. And I think, oh, the Beyonce concert film. I will go and see this. They're pulling some fuckery over at Regal because they did the same thing with the Taylor Swift movie. You can't use the pass to see the Beyonce movie. And not only that, a regular ticket to the Beyonce movie is like $26. That's ridiculous. We love to talk about fucking Ticketmaster gouging prices. How the fuck can they get away with this? This is ridiculous.
It's a premium limited time engagement event, and it's like
it's going to be on Netflix in a month. Like, yeah. Come on now.
Yeah, no, that's the one thing about Regal is that like whenever we check the app, because it's like sometimes there's like some bullshit strings that you can't use it for. Like, oh, it's like, oh, it's a Fathom event. You got to pay full price. Or it's like, oh, it's like a re-release of something. You can't use the pass. You can only see. Yeah, it's like it'll work for any new release movie. And there might be some times where it's like, oh, there was no upcharge. Like the Jurassic Park re-release in 3D. We were able to use the pass for free, and The Nightmare Before Christmas was like there's a bit of an upcharge for 40X and IMAX, but like
yeah, IMAX is usually a $7 upcharge, which if I'm hyped up for a movie enough to see it in IMAX in the first place, I really don't mind paying $7. Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, it's a discount, it's a bargain,
and it's IMAX.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that like it is. Like it's not like, you know, the Lincoln Center in New York, but like it is probably the best IMAX theater in the area. It is like it fills the whole theater, the screen from like the ceiling to the floor. It's like stadium. It's not just like a regular theater with like a big screen.
I'd say it's just a lot of the IMAX. The Lincoln Square one. It's if it's smaller, it's not much smaller.
The Lincoln Square AMC has to be one of the most overrated cinemas in New York State.
You go there, all the theaters are like they're not like theater one, theater two, it's something like the Olympian.
Shut the fuck up, bro. Like I said, my theaters don't need to be fancy, they just need to be serviceable. Tell me to go to theater one, the floor sticky, fine. Can I see the movie?
I do want a comfortable seat though. I have hit that point where I'm like, if your seats aren't hidden, like we have a problem. Like the Paris Theater, Netflix.
Worst. Yeah, no.
Fat phobic theater you got there.
What? The seats are, they're not double wide seats?
Dude, the seats are from 1920. They're upright and they have no cup holders and no armrests.
No one looked like me back then. It wasn't...
That should be illegal. You can't have a movie theater with no cup holders or armrests. It's like you're sitting in an auditorium watching a movie. You're sitting in a folding chair at fucking in a school gym.
In fairness, the concessions were free.
Yeah, they have just like a like bags of popcorn and soda just like at a table right at the front of the theater.
Oh, I thought to say sorry about what's about to happen to you.
For some reason, when you said that, I thought you meant like they have just like a big bowl of popcorn that you could just like grab out of a big bowl of M&M's. Like, here's your fucking concessions.
There's a homeless guy who just hangs out in their lobby and just rubs all of the.
I mean, there's a fucking trough.
But I was gonna, you know, Lewis, remember when we had to go to the Lincoln Square like every week?
Yeah.
Why would you have to go every week?
Because we had screenings that we had to go to for the podcast.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And they were always in like some back theater that, like, you know, again,
a fuck you theater
that had no recliners.
Yeah.
Oh, we know how Mike is without the reclining seats.
Oh,
if Mike cannot lie down while watching a movie, he's uncomfortable.
That's the one.
Dude, I think one time we were in a movie and he was literally laying on his side diagonally in an upright seat. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to get comfortable. I said, it's a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
Just sit and watch the movie.
I want to be planted.
Yeah, you're sitting down. You know,
there have been times like I've been to a theater like by myself and there's like there's nobody else in the theater. There'll be times like I'll get up and I'll move to a different seat after like a half hour. And I'm like, I'll sit here now. I'll see what it's like here now.
Yeah, I know. I've done that. I've definitely done it in empty theaters. Like, I think I did that when I saw Paddington 2. There was nobody in the theater. It was just me and my girlfriend at the time. We were like, let's just fucking move around. I don't fucking. It was great.
I didn't have stuff that I needed to relocate. I'm just there.
Oh, yeah, no, you don't need to relocate. You just...
No, like, I don't have a bag or, like, popcorn or soda that I need to pick up with me. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to the theater by myself, and I'm just going to I'm going to just walk around.
Yeah.
I'm going to jog up and down the stairs like I'm a five-year-old.
I should probably wait. I'll just say it now. When I went to go see the Marvels, I sat Someone, so I tried to get a seat like all the way in the back, and I do that so that I can use my vape in the backs.
You're back a fucking degenerate,
fucking dirtbag. Yeah,
in the back, I can vape in the Lewis's fucking smoke covers fucking, the fucking projector.
Fucking Lauren Boebert over here.
You're gonna jerk your boyfriend off too. What
I'm
are
just
you doing?
Making people rub my tits in the theater.
Your fat fucking tits. Lewis, what if Lewis
just
is
blow it into your shirt? Like,
I oh my god, at when we went to the screening of Us,
this was a while ago.
Yeah,
then.
Were you there with me?
I might not have been.
I think I was with Jack. I was vaping in that theater, and like, just like, I hated critics so much at that point. Like, I just had like lost all of my social graces. So I'm like middle of the theater, just puffing on this vape, watching Us. No one said anything, and it was fine. I've since become more respectful, and I go to the back if I'm going to do that. And I
mean, listen, I'll go to the little hallway that you walk through to go into the theater. Usually I'll get up, I'm gonna go fucking smoke, and I'll go around the little, you know, little wraparound hallway thing.
Sometimes
where you walk
I'll
in,
pop
you go
out to the bathroom,
right.
But you know, now I'm very careful.
Oh, yeah, many times I have smoked in the Regal New Rock bathroom.
Oh yeah,
I've smoked in there more than I've pissed in there.
I can't say that because I pissed too much in there.
Oh, anyway, I took one of the seats instead next to like where the wheelchair accessible spots are that no one ever uses, and I was very.
So you're not only. You're not only vaping in a theater, you're taking a handicapped seat.
So I wasn't vaping in the theater. I wasn't taking a handicapped seat either. It was not labeled handicap. It was just near the handicapped seating.
I don't know, man. Sounds like a fucking
I was on the right side of the handicap spot.
It wasn't marked handicapped. It just was on its own, and there was a lot of space around it, and nobody was sitting in it, so I sat in it.
Anyway.
But you know what? You know what, honestly, if you're sitting in a theater for long enough and you realize nobody's going to buy that seat, why can't I just get up and sit
there?
It's
usually so safe, but then I did it, and this woman was wheeled next to me.
Oh, God.
And I was, like, so nervous. I, like, completely froze because I was like, I didn't buy the seat. So I was like, I had a panic attack in that theater thinking that, like...
During what movie?
The Marvels. This is for the Marvels.
What a horrible experience.
And guys, I'm alone.
Marvels. Not only do you have to watch the Marvels, you're having a panic attack.
You're having a realistic panic attack.
Yeah.
No, that's like going into the big stall in the bathroom. You're taking a shit and then you see the wheelchair rolling. You're like, fuck.
All right. Well, I think we've talked enough about the theater experience.
Mike, what are you griping about?
I had a gripe. So this is under normal circumstances, like if this was a newly released movie, I would have just saved it for the movies we watch section. But it was a movie that came out a while ago, and I didn't see it at the time. But I need some space to rant about. Okay, so La La Land was one of my like favorite movies of like the last decade, and I really like hyped it up and championed it. It's a very special movie to me. And I didn't see Babylon when it came out last year, but I was like, even through all the negative reviews, I was like, you know what? I still feel like I should still see it. Maybe I'll like it, even, because I was like, in the bag for Damien Chazelle. And I haven't hated a movie this much in so long. I felt so betrayed. I'm like, dude, I defended you when everyone was clowning on you for La La Land. And I
like me.
Yeah. And I'm like, and this is what you do to me? Like, fuck you.
Maybe
like,
you should watch La La Land again and realize
I'm
like,
afraid to. Like, I'm really sad. Like, after I saw Babylon, I was like so disturbed. I'm like, God, I need something like actually like something that's a good, old classic Hollywood movie to like wash the stench of this away. So I watched Mary Poppins and I'm like, oh, this is the magic of movies. But, Babylon, within the first 5 minutes, where an elephant shits on a guy and you see like a close up shot of the elephant's asshole as it's shitting out at you. I'm like, what is this fucking movie? And then like right after that, there's like a scene at one of these like crazy parties where like a fat old bald guy gets pissed on by a hooker. And I'm like, come on, dude, like have some fucking class. And then like by the 2 hour mark, I'm like, I'm just so fucking
2 hour
done.
Mark. Yeah. How long
the
is this movie?
It's three
hours. 3 hours. And I'm like, this is why, like, when last episode, you're complaining about, like, people who complain about long movies, like with Killers of the Flower Moon and Oppenheimer. It's like, the reason why people are trepidatious is because 3 hour movies like this that waste your time, that insults you while you're watching it. And it's like they don't utilize the space well. And it's already a daunting task to watch a 3 hour movie. But the fact that you're going to make it so aggressive and indulgent and shitty, literally in a lot of cases, I'm like, no wonder this movie bombed and nobody saw it. And everybody who saw it hated it, is because it's just so just repulsive and disgusting. I'm actually like, I'm at a point where I'm like, there was the scene in the movie where like Margot Robbie starts like throwing up on everybody at the fan. I'm like, I'm actually going to start taking points off of movies for having vomit scenes. Like, it's just too fucking, this should be on the MPAA warnings, like violence, nudity,
bodily fluids.
Yeah. Like, I think like that's more triggering than knowing that there's comic mischief in the movie.
Lewis, Mike and I were talking about what's your favorite like ESRB rating thing. And I said, comic mischief has to be the best one.
Yeah.
Crude humor, comic mischief. Yeah. Drug use.
No. But it's also like, it's the same thing that I didn't like with Triangle of Sadness, where it's like the commentary of the movie is just, and the humor of it is just like, oh, isn't it, we're going to be shitting and pissing and vomiting all over the bourgeoisie. Isn't that so funny? Isn't that such a biting satire? And it's, I'm like, no, it's stupid and juvenile and gross, and I don't want to watch it. And then like by the time, like in the last hour, where I'm like, who are the characters at this point? Like, there's no, like, there's a scene where like Tobey Maguire is just in the movie, and then you go down into like some dungeon where like some guy's eating rats, and I'm like, what is this disgusting, depraved, vile film? And I'm like, I don't want to sound like one of those people like who are like, you know, clamoring about The Exorcist being like some like, you know, unholy, like, you know, but I'm like, This is obscene.
I did not realize, because I knew you were going to complain about Babylon coming into this episode. I did not know that like your issues with it were that like it's icky.
I knew you were going to complain about it, but I didn't know you were going to babble on about it.
But even so, I'm like, it is just like, yeah, a 3 hour long masturbatory, like the commentary is so vapid. And then like all of like the attempts at like comedic things are just like, it's just loud and obnoxious. I'm like, I would rather have like a David O. Russell or an Adam McKay movie over this. And also it's like the ending of the movie where it's like they show the montage of like the most important movies of all time YouTube clip show. And I'm like, what? How dare you think you can do the Cinema Paradiso ending? Like, how fucking.
Yeah, what a fucking crock of shit.
Yeah, no, it's just. I've really, really hated this movie. And I didn't think that I would, because this doesn't really seem like a movie that I would hate. It would seem like, oh, there's enough, you know.
I like shit and vomit.
It seems like there would be enough, like, you know, creative merit. Like, and I guess there were some scenes where it's like, oh, when they're making the movies, like on the sets, like some of that was kind of cool. But that's like maybe like 20 minutes of the movie. The rest of it is just Margot Robbie just being loud and annoying. And then like the.
Is she hot, though?
I mean, yeah, sure, fine, yeah,
right.
I get it.
All right. I mean,
it's that's your thing.
What?
Beautiful women.
Yeah, I guess
all over the place.
Not that, but I guess beautiful women is my thing. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. No, but that's but I have you know, other critical reasons for not liking the movie other than just it was gross. But
no, of course. I felt like I saw this in the theater, which is like actually like feeling like you've been kidnapped. If you've
with
ever,
who, why?
But I went with Sarah. There was nothing else playing that we hadn't seen.
I'm so sorry that Sarah had to see this.
Hey, she was very much involved in the decision. She's partially responsible for it. I will accept no pity.
Yeah, I know
for her.
But I didn't know. Yeah, but like once you find out what's in the movie, sure. Like I feel bad. But
it's like this extremely poopy movie.
Yeah, it's like making her watch a Jackass movie. Like you wouldn't make her do that, would you?
No, I guess I wouldn't. The whole like Brad Pitt storyline just felt like Damien Chazelle was taking a completely different movie and shoving it the fuck in the middle of this other movie.
And then Margot Robbie like don't even meet each other at all in the movie.
No, yeah, it's crazy. I was like, why would you just make two different movies? Have Brad Pitt in for a cameo. You could have
two 90-minute movies instead of one 3-hour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what you could have done. Just cut all that out of the movie, made it maybe just make it 2 hours. Because, again, a movie like this, 3 hours is too much of an ask. Like, I think that, like, unless you're Scorsese or Christopher Nolan, you've built up a pedigree where, like, you can make progressively longer movies and, you know, be able to back it up. This felt like hubris.
Yeah. And of course, there's just like this animal group online that are like, it's actually really good. I hate you.
There's one of those for every fucking movie, dude. Yeah. You can find any bad movie and there's a vocal minority led by Justin LaLiberty. What?
Led by Justin LaLiberty.
Yeah. Who just think like, you know, guys, this movie's actually just contrarians who are like,
Howard the Duck is actually one of the most important movies that has ever been made.
Shut your fucking yeah.
God, not enough lockers in the world to shove people into.
Yeah. Oh my God. Not enough underwear to wedgie. Christ.
All right, Lewis, what do you
throw with Lewis?
Yeah. All right. We're going back to the Marvel well, guys. Because I'm
going to go get my drink.
It's just cow corner again.
But it's more pointed and angry. It's going to be great.
Yeah. Even though the Wooshka Pow corner was also like, why the fuck is any of this happening?
So another fun like quote kind of came out this week. Bob Iger, when asked about why he thinks the Marvels didn't perform very well, he said that it was shot during COVID, which is a fair thing to point out, I guess. But follow that up with, and we weren't able to have enough executive like oversight on the set. So in his mind, the issue with the Marvels was that there wasn't enough studio interference.
Really? Because I thought the issue with the Marvels was that it was a bad movie.
It's not a bad movie. We're going to get into that in a second. But no, I mean, you could watch it. And it's also like it feels like edited by committee, which I think like a lot of these movies do. They had full control over this for a very long time. And from what I understand, Nia DaCosta stepped back. Like if they wanted to do more with this, they could have. Like they are just throwing a very talented young African-American director under the fucking bus for a movie that is, one, personally, the least embarrassing thing they've put out in a while. And also like a pretty fine fucking movie that like, if anything, was ruined by your inability to like schedule things properly. Like, but to say that like you guys needed more fucking business guys in suits on set telling Nia DaCosta how to make her fucking movie, go fuck yourself. I can't wait for this fucking guy to retire. He's such a dumb shit.
We're almost rid of him.
I know.
A few years ago.
I know.
And then he just who replaced him for like a week?
Some other loser.
Yeah, what was his name? Another Bob?
Yeah, it was another Bob.
I think it was Bob Chapek.
Bob Chapek.
Yeah. But I gotta also say it was like the fact that this, it's not even just like, oh, we have to defend like this movie because it was like actually good. But it's like, but it is a fact that the movie is like a complete financial failure.
Sure. Like 100%. Yeah. No, it didn't perform well. It wasn't marketed well. It was also like they could have the saving grace this movie would have had as far as making any money back would be to have Iman Vellani, Brie Larson, and Teyana Paris on a press tour together promoting the movie. And strikes were happening. They didn't get that. They did a shit job promoting it. They edited crappy fucking trailers that made the movie look really bad. And I don't think it's actually really that representative of what the movie is, which is not amazing. I'm not trying to make that case, but like, fuck. Like, this is just, I don't know. It is...
But again, you get them on a press tour and then Brie Larson says something about how women should get equal pay. And then your whole publicity is just destroyed.
Sure, but God, at least people would talk about the fucking movie, which no one was leading up to the
bad publicity, Mike.
Yeah, no, actually, though, like in this scenario, they just needed people to, like, in any capacity, care about this movie. And they failed on that completely. Did. No one did. Even what me, they I have such an easy fucking mark for this. I was like not excited to go see this movie. I went because I'm a loser. But like it should have been really easy to get me.
It's just an obligation at this point.
I invested like 25 years of my life to watch these goddamn movies. I can't stop now. What was it all for?
What is next on the horizon at this point? Like, what is actually coming out next
year? Deadpool 3 is the next movie to come out.
Oh, God.
And that is like, I wonder, like, how much of that do they have? Because I know that one's like halted by strikes, dude, also.
Dude, they're fucked because of the strikes, the Marvel fatigue everyone's feeling, the fucking Jonathan Majors shit. They hinge the entire fucking saga on Jonathan Majors.
Whose trial just started, by the way.
Yeah. And then also hinging all of the universe on the X-Men, which again, like, with the Deadpool, and then I guess if you want to talk more Marvel stuff, like, you can get into actually just talking about the movie now in the movies we saw.
Let's talk about the movies we watched. I did see the Marvels, as I've talked about at length. I think it's a pretty fun movie. I really enjoyed it in a way I haven't enjoyed a Marvel movie in a while, aside from like Guardians of the Galaxy 3, which I would argue is like a very different kind of superhero movie. But yeah, everyone is doing like their best performance, like as their character, I would say. Like, this is Brie Larson's best turn as Captain Marvel. It's Amon Vellani's best turn as Miss Marvel, and Teyana Paris's best turn as
Samuel Jackson
Rambo. He's alive still. He's still collecting that check. He's there.
Are the Skrulls in this? Because I remember at the end of the first one, I was like, when are they gonna pay off the Skrulls?
Yes, the Skrulls are in this, and they were supposed to pay off the Skrulls in Secret Wars, and it did not pay. Not Secret Wars, Secret Invasion, and it did not pay off. This is it does have some of the, if you're not a Marvel fan, this is not turning anyone the fuck around. Very, very much in that genre. It just feels a little bit more like the movies we were getting, I'd say, like after Age of Ultron, like that kind of phase. It feels more in line with that. And I would say it's largely carried by Amon Vellani, who I can't stress this enough, is so charming and so likable and such an interesting, clearly has like a lot of like love for that character. So I would say it's pretty good. It does finally seem to be moving the MCU storyline into a direction, which that direction does seem to be X-Men is the, you know, kind of where you go there. I'd say it's worth checking out. It's not amazing. It's not the disaster its box office would suggest it is. God, I don't blame anyone for not for not wanting to actually like go and take a chance and watch this movie. There was no,
which is most
to.
Of America.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Judging by the box office.
Yeah. Yeah.
If Deadpool 3 doesn't make money, it's like, that's the end.
An exclusive cult club called Everybody.
Deadpool 3, I think they're going to be fine. I think Deadpool does still have the cachet of like dumb people. Who really love just Deadpool as like the way that like Hispanic people love like Tweety Bird. Like, it's just I'm allowed to say that I am Hispanic people, but it's true.
Oh my God. Oh my God. All right, let's
move. I immediately thought of the fucking old school gangster Popeye memes, like the call the cops, I'll have sex with them. Oh my God.
All right, let's move out of the funny haha Wushu Pow movies.
The Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah, I'm gonna talk about some art cinema. So I saw Anatomy of a Fall, which is the Palme d'Or winner of this year from France. And it's a movie about a woman who's an author, and her husband is killed mysteriously, and then the trial that ensues afterwards, where it's trying to figure out, like, was it an accident? Was it a suicide? Did she kill him? What's the deal? Did somebody break in at some point? And the movie conceals a lot of information from you. It like kind of really only reveals to you like what the what would have been known as public knowledge. Like, you don't really you don't get any full answers about what actually happened, but it's more so of just like her trying to like make her case to claim that she is innocent. And it brings in like her son, who is really great performance by a child actor. And the movie is a very riveting back and forth like dialogue in the courtrooms. Like, it is a very interesting courtroom drama. I have a funny story about actually seeing this movie. So I went to go see it on one afternoon, and I got there.
This is a classic Mike move, by the way.
Totally.
What was the timing?
The movie was like, it was like 3:30 or something like that. And I'm like, I'm on the highway. It is 3:30. I'm like, the theater's like 10 minutes away. I could still make it. And I by the time I get to the theater, it's like maybe like, it's like 4 o'clock. And I'm like, because there was just so much traffic. And I'm like, oh God, I missed all the trailers at this point. I was really banking on like this theater shows a lot of trailers, and like the trailers don't even start at the time that is listed there. Like, it'll be 3:30. The trailers will start at like 3:40. So I'm like, all right, maybe I got some time. And I run in, and I'm like, it's mid conversation. These two people are talking, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, I'm trying to like figure out like, what are they talking about? And I'm like, fuck, I missed way too much. Like, I'm not going to get it. So I left. And then I decided,
you didn't even see another movie. You just went home.
I went home. And then another couple days, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go try to see that movie again. I get there on time, and the movie literally starts at the point that I walked in the first time. Like, the only thing I missed was the opening logos. The movie does start like mid conversation, like I saw it. So I literally missed nothing. I made it just in time, but I didn't know it at the time.
That's insanity.
I felt so.
You couldn't even go on. Was there not like a plot summary on Wikipedia?
I mean, but I also kind of wanted to just like, I'm like, well, I didn't want to like, you know, try to piece it together. I was, because it's a mystery kind of. So
if I walked into a movie and I thought maybe I'm like 2 minutes late, I'll quickly open the Wikipedia page and read the first sentence of the plot and be like, okay, that's where. Close it, watch it, you know?
I mean, if I was with people, I would have made an effort, but I'm like, I'm by myself. I'm like, I didn't really get the full, like, you know, experience. It's kind of ruined for me now. So I'm like, yeah, I'll just leave.
It's also like, but yeah, this is like a, you know, it's a Palme d'Or winner. Like, you know, you want
to. Yeah, it's a serious, important movie. I want to make sure that I get the whole thing. So, you know, it was a really interesting, good movie. And I would say, Ant, I think you would especially like it. And I don't think you need to be, you know, like turned off by like the foreignness of it. A lot of the movie is in English, so it is.
What if I don't like the French?
Well, then I guess. Well, I said luckily it's mostly in English.
No. I'm not talking
about
language.
One of them dying. People. So, kind
of
cool.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'm in.
All right. God.
So now, sorry, French right, people.
Yeah. All right. Let's bring it up, Lewis. What did you? You got a movie that you got to talk about now?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Thanksgiving. They finally made a movie based on the classic holiday that we all know and love.
Have you never seen Charlie Brown Thanksgiving?
Oh God, I hate the Charlie Brown holiday specials. I really do.
Dude, you're a Nazi.
It's like, what a surprise to you at this point.
You don't like the Wizard of Oz. You don't like Charlie Brown.
He's told us this many times. This can't be a surprise to you anymore.
Yeah.
No, I didn't know this. This is the first I'm hearing of this.
They're boring. They're all boring. What's not
boring.
What's not boring is Eli Roth's Thanksgiving. And I gotta say, it's pretty painful in the year of our Lord 2023 to like an Eli Roth movie. Because God, has this man spent an entire career like begging you to hate him. But I gotta say, he made just an excellent holiday slasher. It is so much fun. It is a real like throwback to things like Uncle Sam, even a little bit of like Black Christmas. It opens with a Black Friday scene that is so violent and insane. It inspired like panic in me that like I just wasn't expecting. But once that all ends, you're just getting a good classic fucking holiday slasher. Good central mystery that's pretty obvious. But like they still kind of like try and, you know, mislead you. Great performances from like a bunch of like relatively like unknown folks and one very known person. Yeah, just a really, really great time. And it's already getting a sequel. And I think it's great because it felt like the start of a horror movie franchise, which is cool. So, yeah, Eli Roth did a good one.
Thanksgiving is so good. Why didn't they make Thanksgiving 2? Well, now they are.
Joke's on you, bitch.
I saw a bit of a festive holiday movie after I did see the new Alexander Payne movie, The Holdovers, starring Paul Giamatti. And I also rewatched Sideways for like the first time in like 10 years. And I was like, man, I forgot how fucking good this movie
is. Oh, it's a bona fide classic.
Oh, no, yeah. But
you've never seen Sideways?
Nope.
Oh man, you should see it. It's really, really good.
God, Paul Giamatti, that is like one of his best
performances. And Thomas Hayden Church. Both of them are excellent.
Yeah, but it's like if you want to like really understand like why Paul Giamatti is so revered, it's like that movie. Like that is why. And it's like, and this is like the first time that either of them, Alexander Payne or Paul Giamatti, has like recaptured that. And watching this, I felt like the way that I felt last year when I saw Banshees of Inisherin, where it was like a director who like had an early movie that I really liked and it was like really important to me. But then like the rest of their career was kind of just like making a lot of like, you know, movies that weren't really my jam and like, you know, getting bogged down in like controversy.
You're back
and
to form.
And now this was like, this really did feel like, not only does it just like feel like, oh, this is the Alexander Payne, Paul Giamatti of like 2004, but I'm like watching this movie, I'm like, this feels like a movie that is actually like from the 70s. Like, I'm like, Hal Ashby literally came back from the dead to direct this, because it very much has that feeling of like a Harold and Maude or like a Robert Altman movie or an Ordinary People or something like that. Whereas like these. Yeah, it's like Paul Giamatti. He's like a curmudgeonly, like, you know, professor at like some rich boarding school, and him and like this other kid are like they're stuck at the university over the Christmas break, and he has to chaperone him, and he's like, you know, an asshole, and the kid's like, you know, kind of an asshole too, and they have like, you know, a bittering back and forth. And then there's also Divine Joy Randolph, who plays like the chef, and it's like the three of them just kind of like, you know learning to like each other, and you know, having like some sort of like familial connection, because like at the beginning of the movie, like, you know, They very much upfront. It's not like a movie where like it hides like, oh, what's the trauma? Why are these characters so unlikable? It's like, you know, it tells you right up front like what they're going through, so you understand that. But then there are a lot of layers that it peels back and you get to learn more about them. And I think it was a very sweet movie. It's, you know, it's a bit heavy, but it's like emotionally there's a lot of depth to the characters, and Paul Giamatti is great. And he's, you know, he has like that real charm of like that like a hard ass teacher who it's like most of the kids like don't like because he's like, you know, he's too strict or whatever. But it's like, you know, he sees that greatness in you, and like that's why he's strict and he pushes you. And I'm like, it kind of had like that appeal. So yeah, I thought that and also this is a very like quintessential Mike viewing, where I was like, oh, it's, I'm going to take my hot chocolate and my box of McDonald's cookies into the theater, and I'm going to be the only one there, and I'm going to just be, you know, hanging out there watching this wholesome Christmas Oscar movie. So, yeah. And you'd certainly love it.
Yeah, I definitely would. Yeah. I don't know why I didn't get an invite. Oh,
I was seeing it during the week. You were at work.
Gotcha. So dude, so the next movie that we saw, I really, really liked The Killer, David Fincher.
Yep, we saw.
You want to talk about a movie that doesn't waste your fucking time? Man, this is the old movie should be like this. 90 minutes in, out.
It was like 2 hours, but
or two. It didn't feel like 2 hours. Yeah, in, out, right to the point, just entertaining all the way through.
Yeah, the movie, it's very economical and efficient. Like it is very, you know, cut and dry, simple. Michael Fassbender is an assassin
who fucks up.
Yeah, and then it's like, you know, he have his inner monologue. Like most of the movie is just inner monologue. Like he really kind
and
of
the Smiths inner monologue, yeah. And the Smiths music.
Yeah, and it's also like it's a movie where it's like I could definitely feel the COVID-ness of this movie, because I'm like, he's kind of like, there's like five characters in the movie, and most of it is like him by himself in like abandoned warehouses and like, you know, abandoned streets. And but it's like it makes use of that. Like it doesn't feel like it was like restricted by COVID limitations or anything like that. It felt like David Fincher really working with what he had.
Yeah.
And, you know, the
main character doesn't even have a name, and you're just like, you feel so connected to him just because he's the only person on the screen for like 80% of the movie. this is just your guy. And it's like, it almost feels like a video game. Like, this is your character. This is the guy that you are controlling. Well, it's awesome to see.
Well, it is a comic book based on the comic book.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, but I've heard like the comic book is, you know, very, it's very like loosely adapted. Like, it's kind of like, you know, yeah, but no, I thought it was good. But I also do got to say, it is a crime that Netflix is like, again, holding movies like this hostage on their shitty garbage platform. Where it's like, this should be in theaters nationwide, because the sound work in this movie is so, it's so precise.
Yeah, the score. Oh, my God. Trent Reznor did it again. He did it again. It's so good.
Yeah, I think,
and I've got a pretty good sound system and it sounded pretty good. But I agree with Mike, like, this deserves to be seen.
At least like with Apple, like with Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon, at least it's given them like real theatrical runs and IMAX. And I'm like, that is what this movie should have gotten. Like, seeing this in a theater again, it is a very patient, slow moving kind of movie. Again, it's like it makes use of that time, but it is very deliberate and very, you know,
not only that, but like, you know, recently my parents got their own Netflix and they just put me on it. And they got the 4K Netflix, but it's shitty Netflix compressed 4K. So it literally just looks like 1080p. I'm like, what's the point of this? I want to be able to see this in full frame, nice, high quality 4K. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm ever going to get that, because I don't know if they're ever going to release this on Blu-ray.
Maybe
is that going to happen?
Criterion release.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the only hope for Netflix movies, is that they'll get a Criterion.
But I don't think this movie's going to get a Criterion.
I think this would have to be a little bit more liked than it is.
Yeah, it is liked, you know, you know, an 86 on RT, like,
yeah, but again, it's not like prestigious. Like, it's
it's not prestige at all. It's not like Fincher's other, for Fincher, it's like
it's probably I'd say it's kind of a low tier Fincher.
I'd say it's mid to low tier Fincher.
Yeah, which again, it's like,
is still like a solid 7 out of 10 movie, because I love David Fincher. But
it is one of those things where it's like, yeah, it does feel like, you know, it's kind of him making the kind of movie that he does, making it well, but it's like, there's not really a lot special about it. It is just kind of very much cut and dry. He's the killer. And and I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's not really, you know, it's not really like that, you know, like, you know, not much to think about in that regard. But like,
I got to tell you, though, Fassbender kills it.
He's pretty good. And especially
really good. And it made me really want to do my my once bi-yearly watch of Steve Jobs, which I am due for. So I better watch that now.
Yeah. But, you know, and it was good to see him in a movie again. I haven't seen him in so long that it's like I forgot that he was an actor.
Forgot that he existed.
Yeah. All right. We got two more movies left. This is a double feature that me and Ant did. Lewis, you have seen one of these movies, so you can contribute. The first of the movies is Saltburn.
Just a movie about a twisted, sick little freak.
Yeah. We need more movies about sick little freaks.
You saw this one, Lewis?
I did.
Oh, did he see this?
Oh, where
did,
boy.
What do you mean? Oh, did you? What is there a story behind you?
No, I fucking love this movie. Like, it's my favorite movie I've seen this year. I think it's perfect. The other day I was sitting on the subway on the way home from work, and I saw that they had posted the script online, and I downloaded it. I was just like, oh, I'll take a look. I read the whole thing by the time I had gotten back, just because like I wanted to like relive the movie. It's so good.
If you want to see it again, I'll see it with you, because when I saw it, I told Mike, like, I liked it, but a part of me was like, I don't know, I feel like this movie doesn't know what it wants to be.
The movie wants to be a sick fucking twisted sexual thriller that's kind of like
with just a little bit of swagger,
like a talented Mr. Ripley like type of movie, or like
it is
this character's obsession with like this other character, like a tinge of like repressed homosexuality that gets like, you know,
but like not that repressed.
When you again, when you said a tinge of repressed, I just waited for a tinge of swagger, just a little bit.
He's goated with the sauce, and the sauce is period blood.
God,
no, the movie is like, yeah. And remember what I was saying about like Babylon being like, oh, this movie is gross and disgusting. I don't like it. This movie is gross and disgusting, and I loved it.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, it was pretty yucky. Yeah. It was a pretty yucky movie.
Yeah, no, but it's like it is like so psychologically very, very like twisted that I'm like, I'm sitting there, I'm like thinking like, where is this guy going to go next? Like, what is going to happen next? And you're just waiting for like all the shoes. And then the final scene of the movie, I was like, this is what it was all leading to.
Yeah. I find myself in the situation where I'm like, I am so careful talking about it. Cause like, I think as little as you can know going into it, like the better, like get to know these characters the way you're being introduced to them in the movie, because it's so, everything is so purposeful and every meeting is like very significant and earned and fucking okay. The fucking soundtrack to this movie is
I did like the score. I did like that quite a bit.
God, fucking Block Party, Cold War Kids, MGMT. Like, it's just bangers.
It just, it wants you to remind you, like, this is 2006.
Yeah. But it's not like the music that, like, you know, was on like the radio in 2006. It's like what like the trendy people were listening to.
When there was a Block Party drop, I'm like, okay, I fuck with this. Yeah. I love Block Party.
Oh yeah, man.
That Silent Alarm is an all-time classic album.
Yeah, no, the one area of the historical inaccuracy of this movie, though, is that it's 2006 and they're watching Superbad on DVD. I'm like, the movie didn't come out until 2007.
They're rich. Maybe they got an advanced copy. That's my theory, and I'm sticking with it.
I had like the same thing with one of the songs where I was like, this didn't come out in time. Who cares? It's I'm just like, feeling it.
It's almost like that. Remember when the It remake came out and there's that scene where the kid like drops the Legos and it's like, there's this color piece and that piece wasn't made until the 90s. So this movie's terrible. It feels like that.
But yeah, no, the this movie. Yeah. We want to talk about. Yeah. I could just go on a little bit. Emerald Fennell. I know that she makes a lot of. There's a bit of a divisive nature to both of her movies, but I think it is something that like Lewis, something specifically with Me and You, where it like it just hits all of the right cylinders for us.
Yeah.
Where it's like I don't want to engage. I haven't watched Promising Young Woman since the first time I saw it because I'm like, it has been so tainted by discourse that I'm like, I need more time away from it before ever thinking about it again. But with Saltburn, I'm like, I'm not on the internet anymore. I don't need to see what anybody else is saying about this movie. All I know is that this is how I feel about it.
Yes.
And this is how it really, like, you know, warped and you know, shook me. And that's, and I'm like, I certainly feel like this is a movie that, like, you know, I will. And also the fact that this movie is so good that Jack, who has made his personality hating Barry Keoghan, he loved the movie. It's also his favorite movie of the year. And he's also had to finally admit that, yes, he's good.
He's
a good actor.
He's incredible in this movie. I left that there. I was like, oh, like, he's one of the greatest working actors like we have. He's incredible. And the fact that I fully, like, when he was, sorry, that was gonna maybe get into a little bit too spoilery, so never mind, but
fucking tell us off afterwards.
Yeah,
we're not trying to spoil new movies here.
No, see Saltburn. It's fucking worth it, and I feel like it's being overlooked in general. Don't go see it.
Yeah, so in speaking of bad movies that we're gonna spoil anyway, is the last movie we saw, Napoleon. I gotta tell you, this movie really puts the nap in Napoleon, man. It was a fucking snooze.
Yeah, dude, there were parts.
I literally cannot tell you what happened in the last 30 minutes of the movie. I was dead asleep. Dead asleep.
This movie, there were many parts where I was like, you know, looking at people in the theater and I was seeing like people like with their popcorn buckets, like getting up and getting out of the theater. I'm like, they're not coming back.
There were people in that movie where I'm like, there are people like teenagers and like husbands and wives, and I'm like, they're I saw them walking in. I go, oh, look, there's a pretty you know, like, good crowd here. And then by 45 minutes into the movie, I'm like, okay, they're gonna start leaving, right? Like, this is one of those movies where it's like, not to, you know, we shit on that tweet from what's his face from Logan Paul or whatever about walking out of Oppenheimer, because it's like, it's just people talking. This movie is like, it's just people talking. Like,
but it's also like, yeah, there's nothing interesting about the even like our friend Marco, who's like a big history buff, and he was excited about the movie. By the time he saw the movie, he's like, yeah, there was just nothing it was not only just like the historical inaccuracy of the movie, which, like, you know, you could take or leave if the movie's good enough. But like the fact that the movie's so boring, and it also, I just felt like there was nothing to be learned through watching this movie. I'm like, yeah, what is the angle on Napoleon that you're trying to say? Like, the only thing I can gather is that, like, he was a cuck and then he led some big battles. That's really it. There's nothing else interesting that you learn about him psychologically or anything like that. It's just a very played standard period piece that I'm like, the only way that I would ever see this is if my father is like watching it on TNT with commercials like during dinner.
And the worst part is, you know, we saw this in IMAX thinking it's going to be a Ridley Scott big battle spectacle. The battles weren't even that big of a spectacle. It was like the only thing that I could imagine as shocking if you didn't know history would be the scene where he blows up the ice. But like, they show that in the fucking trailer, so it's not even a fucking surprise anymore. The battles don't even look that good. It doesn't even look like the movie was made for IMAX.
No, yeah, because
it looked like shit.
No, yeah, because also just like the way that it's shot, it's just so blue and misty and dark, and you can't really see anything. You don't get a sense of like how big the landscapes or like the amount of extras or like the way that when we saw Killers of the Flower Moon, we're like, this is a grand production. Where like this just didn't feel like that. So much of it feels just so confined and contained. And
jokes on us for thinking Ridley Scott could make a good movie.
No, I trust. I was not a believer from the start. I know you were like, you know, kind of.
I was
kind of
like holding it out. Yeah, but the trailers got me.
Yeah, like there was a part of me that I was like, you know what? Even if I don't really care about seeing this, like I haven't seen a Ridley Scott historical movie in a while, so I'm like, yeah, you know what? Maybe I'm due for another one. And then watching it, I'm like, yeah, now this is why I don't see these movies, because they're fucking boring. I haven't liked a Ridley Scott movie in like over a decade.
What was the last Ridley Scott movie you liked?
I guess The Martian, but then before that, I would get, I guess, like, I don't know, Gladiator's fine. But again, that's like 15 years of a gap.
Yeah, I was expecting like a Gladiator movie. Like, Gladiator's not a great movie, but it's good. It's entertaining. I'll watch it. That's what I was expecting out of this at minimum. And I got none of that. I got 2 hours of 2.5 hours of boredom and a 30-minute nap. Yeah. Also, it shows there's a lot of sex in the movie. It shows like every single time he fucks his wife
because he's such and it's also, it's like, oh, because
a big plot point of the movie is like, oh, well, his wife can't bear a child. He can't have an heir. And that's like a huge major plot point in the movie.
And he just and also like you were even saying, like, before we saw the movie, you're like, you know, even if the movie's not great, you know, Joaquin, he's got to be bringing it. Gotta say, he wasn't.
I knew from like the first 2 minutes, as soon as he started saying those lines, the voice he was saying them in, I was like, yeah, this isn't good.
No, I was telling Mike last week that there was an interview with Ridley Scott that came out like not that long ago where Ridley Scott was like, yeah, I got a call from Joaquin Phoenix like 2 weeks before we started shooting, and he was just like, yeah, listen, man, I gotta tell you, I have no idea what to do with this character. And like, they had to like reread the whole like script together and everything to like to figure something out. I'm like, this is what you figured out? Like, you're just kind of like, I run France. Like, it's like very like
just giving a very like plain.
He didn't even have a French accent.
Yeah, just a plain stoic, I am an important historical man type of performance. And there's nothing. This is what I was afraid that like Oppenheimer would be, where it's just like 100%. It's like, you know. Yeah, just like a bloated.
Christopher Nolan's a good director, though.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah, no, the one aspect of the movie that I did appreciate, and I think more historical movies should do this, is that whenever he's talking to somebody, it gives a little title card of who that person is. And
yeah, there's like important. there's like a little their name shows up under them. And so it's like, oh, this is the leader of Russia.
Yeah. Like, nice. Yeah, give me a little context. Like, who is this guy? Why should I care? What is this scene about? Like, just spell it out for me as much as.
Oh, yeah, that's the one thing Ridley Scott, I think, did okay with is like, you don't have to know anything about history.
Yeah, because it's not a historical movie. It's not,
even if it's not a historical movie, like, these are based on real events. Obviously, they're real battles, real things that happened. You don't need to know the stakes or the context. It kind of spoon feeds you exactly what's happening. Yeah, what are the stakes? Why are they doing this?
Yeah, but it's also, it's like, it's probably also, it's like, you don't need to know history because the movie is not accurate to history.
You also don't need to know history because you shouldn't see this movie anyway. Like, you just shouldn't. Yeah. It's not worth it.
I will go on a limb. I will say this is the most boring movie I saw all year. Like, it's not like it's not the worst. Like, there's some, like, I guess some technical.
Yeah, it was a competent film. It's like it's a solid like 4.5, maybe, yeah, maybe a 4.
Yeah, but it is just so
out of 10, not 5.
Painfully dull that I, again, I felt just trapped
in
the
theater. It's shallow and pedantic.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that is the last of the movies that we had to talk about for this episode.
Guys, you want to all go, before it goes out of theaters, you all want to go see Saltburn again?
Let's try and see if
I'm down. Yeah, it. If I can make that work schedule wise, definitely down.
Regal Pass. That'll be your seminal Regal Pass film.
I can't get it until middle of the month because I have. That's when my AMC goes up.
Okay, we should see when Saltburn. Oh, whatever. We should see when it's playing.
We'll connect.
All right. Well, I mean, there are a lot of big movies in December that I do want. I do want to make a
priority.
Yeah, Poor Things, Godzilla, Eileen.
Speaking of big movies in December, can I plug something?
Oh, yes. Tell the biggest movie.
Yeah, guys, I made a movie. Triple Xmas is coming out very, very, very soon. If you go to xxx-mas.com, you'll see some showtimes. We have some screenings going on. If you're in the St. Louis area or New Orleans, there's also a screening in Narbeth, Pennsylvania. So go to xxx.com for all that info. You can also pre-order the Blu-ray there if you would like to. We got some reviews up. If you Google like xxx reviews, there's a couple out there and they're really positive. People are really enjoying it so far, so it's really exciting. Also it's gonna have a streaming release very, very soon, and also on the website you can see the trailers and everything, and then it's a good time. It's really sleazy and gross, and it's gonna be fun, so check out
when is that screening in Pennsylvania?
It is next Thursday.
Oh, a little too soon.
It's also pretty deep.
Yeah, well, Lewis, I'm very proud of you, and I'm very happy that you got this you got this out in the open and people are seeing it and liking it, and I can't wait to see it as well. Good. You made it, man. You're making your way. Proud of you. Man.
Love that.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this episode. We'll be back again at the end of December to talk about this all again.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Bye.